Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schneider from WGOP Public Radio. Welcome to this candidates forum for Parkland Community College Board. And our candidates, Jeff Lester, Pat Hardesty, and Lupe Diaz. So welcome as well to the League of Women Voters, who are co-sponsoring this event along with the Parkland Community College. Our timekeepers today are Katie Pratt and Becky Brock. Thank you. I gotta have a script, man. And there will be opening statements, closing statements, and questions. I may pose follow-up questions or requests for clarification if need be. Please hold your applause. No demonstrations during the candidates forum. There will be time at the opening and the closing. The opening is right now. Thank you to the candidates for coming and to the League for sponsoring. We do numbers ahead of time, and we'll go in that order, and then with each question, we'll bump it up by one candidate so everybody gets a chance to answer questions first several times. The opening statement goes to Pat, or Jeff Lester, I'm sorry, you're first. Pat Hardesty will be second, Lupe Diaz will be third, and Jeff, your 3-minute opening statement.
Great, thank you. I thought I'd tell you a little bit about myself. I'm currently vice chair of the board. I'm finishing up my sixth year, and nobody's really running against me, so I'm just kind of here for fun. So I'm married to my wife Cindy, been married for 36 years. I have 3 children, Caitlin, Nicholas, and Nathan. Caitlin's 34, they're all grown. She went to Loyola and currently lives in town. Nicholas, my middle son, actually got a degree from Heartland and then got a degree from ISU and is currently working on his doctoral program in physical therapy in Provo, Utah. So that's kind of cool. And my youngest son, Nathan, took some courses at Heartland while he was still in high school and graduated from ISU and is currently working on his master's degree at UIC Chicago. So things are going very well for them. I'm a graduate of ISU. I graduated from ISU, I hate to say this, in 1975. I have a degree in business with a concentration in insurance. I went right into the insurance business after I graduated from college at 21 years of age. Worked for a company called Lincoln National for 5 years. They were actually the company at that time that had all the benefit programs for State Farm, so I kind of had it in there. And then I went to work at Clemens & Associates after a couple years there. I was the vice president of the life agency there. And a partner in 1999, I actually sold my interest in that company and started my own business, Benefit Planning Associates. So ran that company until 2015 when I sold that company. And now I am retired. So that's kind of a background on me. I don't know how much do I have more time. I can continue to talk if I want to continue to talk.
You might want to say why you want the job.
Why I want the job? Because, you know, it's that's a great question. I should have probably. No, been on the board for 6 years now. I think we've accomplished a lot of really good things, done a lot of interesting things. I've really enjoyed my time, and I think it's a way to give back, and I think it's a way to contribute. So. That's pretty much what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Pat Hardesty, your opener.
My name is Pat Hardesty. I am the business manager for the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union here in Bloomington, Illinois. I am also the training coordinator. I have been the business manager and training coordinator for 9 years. I've been a member of the local for 43. I started in this trade with the approach of trying to do the best in my chosen field. I started out as an apprenticeship instructor with the local and the leadership forum and then worked my way up to what is now the business manager. I'm in charge of all business operations for the union. I am also in charge of the apprenticeship training program, which is a 5-year program where the apprentices go to school 9 months from September through May, 2 nights a week. They learn all aspects of the piping industry, whether it is heating, cooling, plumbing, pneumatic controls, electronic controls, anything that goes into the piping in the building. we train these apprentices on. Recently, our program has produced the second place finisher in our state contest, and just last month, we had the third place finisher in the state of Illinois. I ran for the position 6 years ago and was elected along with Jeff. I've spent 6 years on the board right now. Much like Jeff said, I think we've accomplished quite a bit in that six-year time frame. I have a grandson that is going to Heartland right now and a granddaughter who will be attending next fall. Carmen will be in the nursing program. That is her chosen field. I think that the college has both grown and is ready to experience another growth portion here. I am trying and working with Keith, the president, over an apprenticeship program for Firestone tire manufacturer here in town. We hope to get that concluded here within the next year and get that program up and going, hopefully by the fall. It's been a wonderful experience to give back to the community and to be a part of this board for the past 6 years. Thank you.
And Luke Diaz.
Good afternoon to everyone here and listening in Radio Land. I want to thank Heartland Community College's Service Learning and Civic Engagement Team, the League of Women Voters, WGLT, for hosting this awesome candidate forum today. I'm happy to be a part of this great event on Heartland's campus. We need to give more attention to our Board of Trustees election. When I mentioned I was going to run for Heartland Community College Board, some people told me no one really cares about this election, that no time or money will be sunk into my race because people will usually only give to city council elections this year. I'm Lupe Diaz, your next Heartland Community College trustee, and I'm asking for your vote this Tuesday, April 2nd. Currently, I'm an operations manager for S's Express Lines right here in Normal, Illinois. You might notice the big yellow E on the trailers. I've lived here in Bloomington pretty much my whole life since 1987. I attended Brigham Elementary School, Parkside Junior High, and graduated from Normal Community High School in 1994. I once attended a great small community college at the Towanda Plaza. I served as the second student government president of Heartland Community College my sophomore year and secretary my freshman year. We passed our first student government constitution when I served as president. We were visiting other community college campuses to see how we can contribute to a new campus. I served on the Illinois Board of Higher Education as Heartland Community College representative. My opponent chose to challenge me in the special election to serve 2 years in the remainder of a six-year term. I guess that's why we have three trustee candidates running for 3 6-year terms. I have an opponent that chose not to run for his seat, but instead goes after me. I've been told it's because some people don't want a Hispanic serving in public office in our area. Or others say that the Pipefitters Union just don't like me. All I say regardless, I'm here to serve and give back to my community that has given me so much. I'm very pragmatic, I do my research, and I love to get input from all sides regardless of my position. I will be accessible to all my constituents, and I plan to hold 2 to 3 town hall events throughout our district every year. I want to help communicate to our community members the program and happenings at Heartland Community College. I want other community leaders and business leaders, union leaders, to attend the town hall meetings I plan to host. I want to be sure we bring our leaders and people together that may need help or resources. Once again, thank you all for attending to hear from all of us running for trustee. Vote Lupe Diaz, April 2nd.
Thanks very much. With me is Dinah Hellman of the League of Women Voters, and she'll be asking questions along with me. Questions were posed by students at Heartland and by employees at Heartland. I may add a couple. Let's start with one from employees, and Pat Hardesty, you are first up on this. What is your philosophy on budgeting and spending? Should the college always maintain a balanced budget, or are there times when deficit budgeting and spending is justified? 2 minutes.
The college right now has a reserve, which is why you build a reserve, is in case of hard times that you need to have a deficit budget. A deficit budget is not what we want or recommend, but sometimes decisions have to be made that play into that situation. We would not be operating under the deficit budget right now if it was not for a lack of funding from the state of Illinois for 3 of the 4 years of the Rauner administration. With the plan that the board had put into effect, this was accounted for, and we knew that we would be in a deficit budget this year. Like I said, this is not something that the board wanted to see, but it is a necessary evil to maintain the level of academic success that this college has had.
And Lupe.
In my experience in the business world, deficits is not a thing that we hear too much of. And I know in the public office, there's a lot of that. And Heartland has suffered a lot from the state not putting money in the budget. Therefore, I really do not agree with having deficits of any kind. We need to do everything in our power to make sure our budgets are balanced. We don't want to carry over for the next year. And I understand there's sometimes that we don't have the money there, but we have a surplus that we could dip into at those times. But at no time I would agree to having a deficit.
Thank you, Lupe. And Jeff Lesner.
Yes, deficits aren't fun. It's something that we really obviously don't want to deal with. But as Pat said, we've built up a very good reserve and we maintain that reserve. And we build that reserve. Sometimes that reserve goes down a little bit, obviously, when you have a deficit situation. But if you're a financial planner, you know that you try to have about 3 to 6 months of operations and costs in a savings program. And that's what the college does, and that's how we deal with the deficits. You know, we're still very careful about spending. I'm also chair of the finance committee, and every month we look at all the bills and we know where the money is going. And sometimes we question those things and we talk about those things and we talk about ways that we can save. And over the years, the college has cut back quite a bit on a number of areas to try to keep costs down. So I think we've done a good job with it, run a little bit of deficit that will go up and down from time to time, but as I said, we keep a strong reserve, so it's not really a situation that we can't deal with. And we'll continue to watch the spending. I know everybody's concerned about spending, and we will continue to stay on top of that. Thank you.
The next question goes to Lupe Diaz first. I know how.
Lupe, what role do you believe students should have in a college's shared governance structure, and what will you do to seek out their concerns and priorities?
First, I would say that I would do everything in my power to make sure we keep the cost to a very minimum for students. And I understand that there's certain degrees that people like to go into, and sometimes the cost is higher than other programs. I think to sit down and talk to the students, and like I mentioned in my opening statement, that I would like to hold town hall events for students to engage and open up about those things so we could discuss and talk about things that we might have to sacrifice or do and give more money to fund the college.
Thank you.
Would you repeat that, Diana? I don't think I quite got it all.
What role do you believe students should have in a college's shared governance structure, and what will you do to seek out their concerns and priorities?
I think it's really important to have the students involved. And obviously we have a student trustee on the board that is very involved in what's going on, and we're very sensitive to the students. I know the cabinet is very sensitive and gets out and talks to the students, see what the students want. We're very careful in situations as far as costs go. Before we talk about those costs or do anything with the cost of your education, you know, talk to the students and find out, you know, what sits well with the students. You know, we work closely with the student trustee. Josh is the current student trustee and has been very, very good. And Josh goes out, we get a new one here pretty quickly. But it's very important to be involved in the students. I'm around, I like to talk to students. We talk to students sometimes. both here. We have a meeting in Lincoln, Illinois. And when we go to Lincoln, we just got done with our meeting in Lincoln. When we go to Lincoln, the students come in, we have pizza with the students, and you try to talk to the students as much as you possibly can. Likewise, in Pontiac, in the fall, we go up to Pontiac, and it's always an hour that we spend with the students talking about what's going on and what they're looking for.
As Jeff just stated, we have Josh Crockett, who is our student trustee and is part of the student government body here, who relays and communicates with us and the students over anything that involves them. When we had to do the recent tuition hike, Josh and his board had discussed it and came back and recommended that the students were behind this move. We listen to the students every chance we get. Josh has free rein in the board meeting to speak his mind whenever he wants, since he is the student representative. We have all gotten together and sat and talked and discussed many things. Josh has done a wonderful job conveying the students' opinion to the board as a whole, and that is always paramount on the board members' minds as to what are the students thinking and what can we do to make this environment better for them.
Okay, thank you all. The next question is, we'll stay on finances. Discuss your view of the current state of property tax burdens in the community college district, how you decide when you'll approve a property tax increase or a cut, and how you balance that with tuition. And we'll go first to Jeff.
Property taxes. Boy, that's a good one. I pay a lot, I just want you to know. The college gets a small amount of that. We don't really get a huge amount of the property tax money. It continues to go up. I know it's going to go up a little bit. Of course, it's all based on the assessed valuation. The assessed valuation did go up a little bit this year. I think it's scheduled to go up a little bit next year. So we do get a little bit more money. But boy, you got to be really sensitive to that. State of Illinois has one of the, I think, if not the highest property taxes in the United States, is not the second highest. So I'm very sensitive to that, and I know a lot of people are very sensitive to that. There's probably better ways to fund school districts than property taxes, and I think we should continue to look at those kinds of things and develop good ways to fund the college and to fund other schools.
Is that right, Steve?
Property taxes funding schools is never the correct way to do it. The state of Illinois has always been behind in the progressive movement to move away from property taxes, because then you are having the property owners fund the schools themselves. That is not an equal and fair way to do it. We are very conscious of what the property tax rates are in this area, and we realize that they are quite high. But the school funding, originally the way a community college was supposed to be funded, was 33% from the federal government, 33% from the state, and 33% from the district. We know right now the state of Illinois no way pays 33% of what this college costs. Therefore, they are falling down in their funding recommendations, which pushes it back to the property taxes. Until the state of Illinois changes the way they fund education dramatically, we really don't have any other control over it except the property taxes. We have mulled many a time during the last 2 years, 3 years, over whether or not we needed an increase or not. Between the slight increase in property taxes that the college receives and the addition of tuition cost, we have been able to either balance it or run at a slight deficit. So until the state of Illinois steps up to the plate and does what they're supposed to do, we are rather hamstrung as a board.
And Lupe.
I just, property taxes, I know the two trustees up here in the past have voted for increase in property taxes. They voted recently for increase in the tuition for students. My thing is, have we looked at, you know, people in the private sector, people that would would have no problem helping fund some things on campus. You know, give them naming rights to the building. Anything to offset the cost for property taxes. Like, they both said that Illinois' property taxes are way too high, and everyone's always looking for a little more, and I know all the school districts are wanting to increase our property taxes to pay for more and more. So my question is, when is more and more enough? So in my opinion, property taxes, we should look at a way to fund our school district possibly a different way altogether. I know the governor's looking at different areas to increase the state budget funding, and I hope we could hold our governor and our state legislators accountable to make sure that the funds do come to Heartland, the 33% that they're supposed to fund for our college.
All righty, thank you. I'm going to ask a follow-up question, an untimed follow-up question, but please be limited in your answer. It's pretty clear the state is not going to change by any big amount what it's doing with community colleges, higher education, or even K-12 education. The state has a structural deficit of, depending on who you talk to, $1 to $3 billion a year. It has the pension fund crisis or unfunded obligation that it must address, and many other draws on it. So it's pretty clear the state isn't going to change what it's going to do. What will you do? What will you support in terms of tuition increases or program cuts or property tax increases or a mixture of those in your next term if you are elected? And let's go, since that's a follow-up, let's go in the same order. Jeff Lester.
Yes, this continually comes up in board meetings. And one of the things that we continually have discussed is the state isn't paying us what they should be paying us. And basically, we know that the state doesn't have any money. You know, we've come to the realization that that revenue is not going to be there. And what we have to do is go out and find new ways to provide revenue. And that's what the college has done. We're setting up new programs, looking for different ways, talking to employers, and looking for different ways to generate revenue. And I think that's the way it's going to be. For the college to be very sensitive to what the people want, you know, what businesses want, what education wants, and we're going to use those ways to generate more revenue to offset the money that we're just not going to get from the state. The state just doesn't have any money. I mean, obviously we know that. And they have a lot of issues that may get solved. I don't think they'll get solved as long when I'm still here, but we're doing a lot of things. The key is that we're doing a lot of things to generate more revenue. We can't worry about the state.
To begin with, the school is looking and been reaching out to many of the area businesses and factories here in the community as a way to bring in more adult education learners, whether it be through apprenticeship programs, continuing education, or the changing workforce that is coming about in this community. Robotics is going to be a big push here with the beginning of Rivian Motors Brant out here north of town, the new candy company that will be moving in come in January when the sale is final. There will be a lot of different production lines coming into this community that the college is gearing up for to bring in more revenue by partnering with these businesses to be able to hold our costs down, bring our student hour counts up, which helps with reimbursement from the state and federal government. As far as tuition hikes and property taxes and all that, this board that I have been a part of has worked very hard and looked at all the options possible to keep the cost as low as we can for the student. And one thing that we are proud of is this is the best value for your dollar in this area as far as college education goes. And right now we are only the 11th priced junior college in the state of Illinois, even though the census will tell you that the McLean County Bloomington Normal area is one of the richest areas in the state as far as college community college districts go. So as far as property values and that, so we have worked very hard to control costs and will continue to do so in the future.
And Lupe.
Yeah, and what Pat was saying, that's just a fraction of what can help increase. We should also be looking at our international students and our out-of-district student costs for tuition. To me, the price is too high. Maybe we should look at lowering those prices, because those people will come to our community to pay taxes, get a job, pay rent, do whatever they need to live in a community. So therefore, we should look at them as being in-district tuition students instead of out-of-district tuition students. And we could, and with adding four more sports to our roster, that will help us also increase our athletes to come to this school. So that's what I would look at us to do the best as we can to increase getting more students here, regardless if it's adult learners or if it's right out of high school, or even we have people that, you know, want to go back to school, but it's kind of hard because of the schedules that we have for classes. So we need to look at that as well. Maybe we need to open up more evening classes, you know, possibly Saturday classes.
All right. Thank you, Lupe. The next question will go first to Pat Hardesty. Diane.
What specific experiences have you had addressing the concerns of a diverse population, and what steps should Heartland take to be more inclusive to all students and community members?
Since I have been on the board, we have worked very hard to outreach to the at-risk students, to the adult community, to continue their education. We have the daycare center here, the Challenger Center to bring in more people, more students, more children to get an experience here at the college. Doing the job that I do on the street also, we try to diversify our base as much as possible by taking in some at risk, but also by reaching out through the schools and working with them, the high schools in the district, to be able to offer some community college classes as dual credits at both high school and college level, so that the cost is reduced. So hopefully this reaches some of the at-risk people in Bloomington Normal and the school districts around us and helps them further their education.
For diversity, far as if you're talking about race and stuff like that, obviously my name's Lupe Diaz. My mom was born here. My dad was born in Mexico. I'm an American, so therefore diversity is something that I've always looked for in anything that I've done in life. I remember being in school, elementary school, there's very few Hispanics students that I went to school with. So in any aspect in that, and where I work at, we hire a very diverse workforce, people of all ages, people of all races, religions. Pretty much that's, since I wasn't elected to the board, so I can't really answer that for their side of things. So, but for me, that's what I've done.
Okay, thank you, Lupe. And Jeff Lester.
Diversity, boy, that's the new political correct buzzword nowadays. Boy, I hear it all the time. The college works very hard at diversifying the population. We have an ESL program, obviously. You know, one of the things that you have to do to help the diversity situation is to, you know, have ways for kids to get to the school, to have people for, you know, have ways to get to the school. You know, we have the buses, the public transit system, you know, we have an association with them to try to make it convenient for people to get to school, because, you know, some people just don't have cars. You know, they don't have ways to get to school. So we work with that very closely. We have other programs. And if you look around, you'll see the diversity in the population here. So I think the college does a great, great job with that, and will continue to be sensitive to that issue.
All righty. Lupe will get the next question first. Is there one existing program you'd like to see expanded, or a new program you'd like to see implemented at Heartland Community College, and why?
Like the previous question, I think Heartland right now offers a very diverse set of programs, and we should look at expanding what we have now and potentially look at other things that other, you know, reach out to high school students to see what they're looking for, what we're not offering, that a lot of high school students are looking for that are going to four-year colleges or going away to a different community college elsewhere.
Okay. Jeff Lesser.
Yes, we're constantly looking at new programs. As a matter of fact, Sarah may not want to like to hear this, but I talked to one of the engineering firms. One of the things I continue to hear is that surveyor programs is something that's highly needed by the engineering firms and the firms around. So those are the kinds of things that we look at. It takes a long time to get those programs going. We just started a medical assistant program. We just started a physical therapy, physical therapist program a couple of years ago. It's a continual thing, and the colleges do that. I think we're really, really doing a great job in that area. I think the board is always contributing to that because we're out in the community and we hear about what's going on and what's needed. So we're real sensitive to setting up new programs, and I think we've done a good job with it.
And Pat Hardesty.
The board has, like Jeff said, added new programs as we have gone along and could afford them. The one thing that I think that the college and the board needs to address is, like I spoke in my earlier question, is the manufacturing base in this area and being able to provide the support and the education that these employers and employees need in the ever-changing technology of the world today. The robotics is going to play a big part in it as it comes to the forefront. The construction trades, there are more technical advances every day in those industries also that further and continuing education is needed. These are just a couple of the steps that can be taken. Not everyone, as they graduate high school, is going to go on to a four-year university. And I think the college is starting to address those needs by coming up with more stackable certificates and vocational programs to help these students and the continuing education for the adults that work in these facilities now.
All right. Jeff Parker gets the next question first. Diana?
Jeff, do you believe the cost of textbooks is an issue the college should be focused on? Why or why not?
Boy, we've been really, that's been a sensitive thing for 6 years that I've been on the board, and we've continually worked on that. And the students have done a great job with this, and I know that we just had a discussion about this in the last board meeting, where we've got a lot of, you know, the trade, you can trade your books in and get different books, and we're doing a lot of things to try to save money in those different ways. It's a tough one. Textbooks are just really, really expensive. I don't even really understand why they're so doggone expensive. But, you know, it's something that we continually work on, something that we're sensitive to, and there are programs in force now to help that situation.
Okay, Pat Hardesty.
The students have started the buyback program like Jeffrey discussed. We also now offer a lot of the books online, which has reduced their cost there. The cost of the books is a deterrent for some students, but I'm sure that if everyone works together, we can come up with a way that those students can afford their books. The books are kind of set at price, not by the college, not by the board. So those are not something that we really control, but we are sensitive to the increases and the cost and have backed different programs to help reduce these costs to the students through both the buyback program, the loan program, and having more classes with their books online, which gives them to them at a cheaper cost.
Yeah, one of the things that we should really look into is having all programs online. All books should be online. Students shouldn't be paying an arm and a leg for books. Sometimes it seems like the books cost more than the class you're taking. And we need to look in ways to be making better use of our technology. Maybe there's programs out there that we could rent textbooks for the semester for the students. But to me, like elementary, junior high, and high schools now are using tablets for the majority of their classrooms. I'm quite sure that's helped cut the cost for those school districts for doing that. So therefore, I think we should look at that here at the college level. Why don't we have the same program here?
Okay, thank you. Pat Hardesty, you get the next one first. How can Heartland Community College stem the tide of declining enrollments?
The college right now does a lot to try and stem this tide. There is an overall decrease in the academic side so far this year as far as a reduction in student hours. Not a dramatic 1-2%, but it is still there. By going out and offering some of these classes as dual credits, we are costing ourselves possibly some students that are picking up enough credits to go somewhere else by the time they come here. The declining enrollment is all about recruitment, whether it is through the athletic programs, through the international programs, or through just the high schools themselves. With the three campuses that this college operates between Pontiac, Lincoln, and the main campus here, we have a lot of outreach to the surrounding communities and are doing a good job of recruiting those people here. Once we get it out there, there was a thing in the Pantograph a couple weeks back that stated that Heartland, for your dollar, what cost were, was the best value in the community. And that counted Wesleyan, Illinois State, Lincoln College, and Heartland. So I think that the school is doing a good job of recruitment. And this temporary downturn in hours, this small 1-2% drop, I think will come back in the future and increase once we add the courses with the manufacturers and stuff here in town.
I think one of the things that we need to take in consideration is the cost of living to live here in Bloomington Normal. Sometimes people have to make a decision, do I take this class this semester or do I pay for it to get my car fixed? We need to look at things like that because that I think is a big factor why the decline in enrollment is. Some students don't qualify for grants. They rely on their parents to pay for their college or get student loans that they have to pay an arm and a leg for the rest of their life. I think the cost of living in our area in the state of Illinois is a big factor in the decline of people making choices. Do I take three classes this semester? Do I take one class? And I think that's what we need to be looking at is in our community, who can we help give a leg up to go to college and be the taxpayer that pays for the next students?
And Jeff Lester, step up to the plate.
Thank you.
It's opening day.
It is, that's right, you're exactly right. We've got to hurry this thing along. We have been declining a little bit, but boy, compared to the other colleges around, we're hardly declining at all. And we feel that, you know, we talked about this recently, we feel that there's just a lot of opportunity out there to bring in new students. You know, one thing that came up was CDL training. I mean, you know, there's a lot of jobs out there available for truck drivers. And this is one thing that we're working on right now. Those are great jobs. You know, those are $60,000, $70,000 jobs. And the truck driving companies can't get people to fill them. You know, they can't get truck drivers. So we're working on things like that. Like Pat said, the other types of companies like Brand Industries, we're doing some things with them. You know, they're doing training programs. Rivian will be another one. We hope that it will continue to grow. And we'll be doing some things with that. So a lot of opportunity out there. Bring in new students.
Okay, and I think that was it for that cycle, right? Yeah. Lupe, you're gonna start this next one. Hang on.
Okay, this is a landing question. Students often cite their appreciation for the abundant resources offered to them on Heartland's campus. During this time, higher education is extremely underfunded in the state, Are you committed to maintaining the current level of student services that the college offers? And if so, what specific student service do you believe we need to expand to serve an even larger audience?
Lengthy question there, but I would do my best to maintain what we have now, because I know we're all under a lot of stress with paying for a lot of things in our lives and paying for tuition for school. And I think student services is something that a lot of students look for when they go to a college, and I understand that we need to make sure our student services is funded. I mean, I had opportunity when I came to Heartland. We had a small budget, but we had a student services budget that we tried our best to reach out to the students and had different events for students to feel a part of. Even though we were in the Towanda Plaza, we utilized the parking lot to our best abilities, so.
Okay, Jeff?
Yes, we continually look at services. One of the things we just did is put in a subway on campus. That was a big thing. We realized that we had some issues with kids needing something and other students needing something to eat and drink, and they really didn't have a good situation for that. So brought Subway in, and we found that that's very, very good. We just expanded athletic programs. And we took a hard look at that, because that's one thing I get a lot of heat off of, is that, why do we have athletic programs at a community college? And we just find that this brings in good students. It brings in additional dollars. The new programs are still going to generate revenue from those new athletes in student administrative costs. I can't remember what they call it. Student fees. There we go. So we're still going to get money from that. So, we're continually looking at different things and ways to provide services. But I think we've done a really, really good job in being sensitive to it.
The board is constantly looking at ways to improve the student services and the student experience here on Heartland's campus. The book buyback and the online books would be one thing that I would like to see expanded a little bit, if possible, to help the students not only with cost but with the availability of their material that they need. I was in favor of the expansion of the sports program, not only from the additional students that this will bring in, but also from the aspect of the advertising that you get along with that, as a Heartland Community College sports team works its way through the season and up the ladder. The programs that the students that Josh has brought to our attention, that the students partake in, spring break, help out, those type of things have been really successful and brings a lot of the students together. I think that Heartland will always be looking for ways to expand those just to add to the student experience itself and to help with the overall cost.
Jeff Lester, you'll be up next.
Okay.
As technology evolves and the industry standards change, how does the college ensure students are receiving a cutting-edge educational experience that will prepare them for the jobs of tomorrow?
Technology, yeah. Obviously, that's an area where we continually work at improving, and there's some really good things that have gone on in those areas. But, we do have a lot of online programs that help with that. There's just a lot of things that we're continually doing in the technology areas. I mean, we have the space program. I can't think of the actual terminology for it. Challenger program. We have a big technology day here at the college for bringing in kids and doing things like that. So we're doing a lot of things, and we will continue to be sensitive to that. I mean, that's the up and coming area. We all know it.
As we have stated earlier, the technology is rapidly changing every industry that we deal with, whether it is education, construction, manufacturing. Farmers even have GPS on their combines so that they don't get lost. So the ever-changing world of technology is something that the college works very hard to come up with and keep up with. We listen to feedback from former students, employers in the area, that this is what is coming down the pike, this is what we are going to need. We need to adapt something for those manufacturers and that, and the college has stepped up in the past and done that. We're going to see more of it with the expanding manufacturing base here in Bloomington Normal, and I have no fear whatsoever that the college will continue to step up and meet those demands of the technology in the future.
And Lupe.
For technology, I would hope that for our instructors and professors that we keep them up to date on the newest technologies, the cutting edge stuff, so they're passing it on to our students. Technology, like Pat said, is in all areas. My company in particular is expanding. Pretty much every part of our operation is going to technology. And some people don't like it, but that's what we're going to. And I really hope that, for instance, the Heartland Community College website, the social media, that kind of technology I think is cutting edge as well. You know, sometimes I think people don't realize we have our own resources in our cabinet that have, and I think that we have a lot to offer here at Heartland. Technology is the reason we're probably where we're at today with the campus and all the students. Thank you.
Okay. Ernesto, you'll be first on this one. What is an optimal ratio of administration and staff to faculty to students, and an optimal ratio of administration and staff to students?
I don't really have a number to put with that. That's a pretty wide-ranging question. I know that we have cut the administration level here at the college since Jeff and I have been on the board. We have added teaching positions so that the student ratio for teacher to student maintains a nice balance. It all depends on classes that you are offering, in my opinion, or programs that are coming into effect. As to any program that starts out new is going to have a more administrative level until it's up and running. So I don't really see where you can put a ratio of administration to teachers or administration to students, that kind of thing. I think that we as a board have worked very diligently on those items, and our main focus has always been student to teacher ratio for classroom size so that each student receives the best instruction that they can.
And Lupe.
Yeah, I would say it depends on the department and courses and classes offered. That would depend. Administratively, a lot of companies I know do less with more, do less and expect more. And I think here at Heartland, from the meeting that I had with the cabinet and the president, it seems like the group that we have here are doing a very good job at what they're doing. I didn't hear any complaints that they needed more staff to help them do their jobs. And of course, we always want more, but we should never have five administrators to two staff members and one student. It should be the other way around. We should do, you know, one to maybe five to 30 students. If you want to put a number on it, that's what.
Okay, and Jeff.
It's interesting. I've worked with many different school systems in my career and what I did. And anytime you talk to the teachers, they always said there were too many administrators. It never failed. It was always the same thing. My job isn't to micromanage that situation either. I don't know what the proper ratio is. Obviously, I think you should have more teachers than you have administrators. But it's a tough one, you know. You gotta have both, and they both have to do a good job, and it's not my job to manage that percentage. I think there are people here that are very qualified in doing that, and we kind of look at it as a board and see what we think about and make our contribution to it. But I think we've done a good job there. don't get too many complaints here at the college. Thanks.
Okay. Lupe, you're going to be first on this next one.
Lupe, as a board member, how will you engage with students, employees, and the district community to best understand the interests of those groups?
One thing I would do is reach out to different organizations within the District 540 and talk to them, sit down and actually talk to them and see what the needs that they have and what they need. And like I stated earlier, I would host town hall meetings basically for people to come out and have open mic and speak, you know, on anything that they would like to speak about. And the other thing my plan would be is at least once or twice a month, I would like to set up hours for anyone, students, to approach us with anything or myself with anything. So pretty much, and one thing I would do is reach out to the student government, obviously, to see what the needs of the students around them that are talking to them about. Because, you know, sometimes what you hear from student government members and what you actually hear from the real students are two major big things that I think people don't take into factor. To me, I think our board looks more to the student government to hear what the student needs are and not sometimes actually reaching out to the students that wouldn't really speak to the student government members about things that's going on in their lives. Thank you.
Jeff?
Repeat that question, would you please, Diana?
Yes, as a board member, how will you engage with students, employees, and the district community to best understand the interests of these groups?
Well, we're always available. The pay is real high for this position, but you know, we try to contribute as much as we possibly can. I am retired now, I have a little bit more time on my hands, so I'm available to anybody that wants to talk to me. I'm in the building on occasion, maybe not as much as I should be. I should probably go down and get a Subway every once in a while just to kind of hang around in there and see what's going on. It'd probably be a good thing. As far as meetings go, I don't know how effective that would be. I haven't done that. I just don't think it's an effective thing. I'm always available. I've gotten a few phone calls. I've gotten a few letters, but very, very few.
And Pat?
The way I have always looked at this is we are available through email accounts and everything else, and there has been times that my email has blown up over situations that are going on out here at Heartland College. So it isn't like we do not meet with the constituents or the students or the businesses in town or the area. For instance, I live in Normal, but I grew up in Chenoa. I represent workers in Leroy and Hayworth and Pontiac, bargaining units in each one of those communities. So I am out in the community quite a bit, and the people in those communities know that I'm on the board and have brought concerns and questions to me in the past. I think we have to keep an open mind and listen to what not only the students, the faculty, the staff, and everyone wants and needs, but also how do we balance that out as to what can we afford and what can we do. So getting out in the communities themselves and talking to not only the students, but the people that pay the taxes that fund this institution is a very important part of the outreach of being a board member.
Okay. This next question will be the last question before closing statements, and it goes to Jeff Flessner first. All of you had at some point talked about serving the local business community, the area business community, with training programs to boost local workforces and employment numbers as well. Are the criteria you use to decide whether such training programs are worthy things like average wage, number of jobs created, future career potential, a desirable tech presence in the community that you want to serve? And how do you weigh those criteria in terms of what's most important versus less important? Have a general discussion about that.
Yeah, that's really a technical question. And basically, you know, the experience is that we are sensitive to those programs. Like I mentioned, the CDO program, I mean, those are high-paying jobs. And we look at those kinds of things, but you have to take into consideration the cost of those programs. And then you have to take into consideration, you know, how long it takes to get the, you know, get the program set up. The physical therapy program, as an example, to give you some idea, is we had to have that program in place. We had to have the people hired. We had to be paying them for a year and a half before we could actually, I think it was a year and a half, might have been a year, before we are actually able to take students because of all the certification and the difficult things that we have to do. So, you know, basically the staff is sensitive. You know, they report to us and tell us, hey, this is what it takes to get this type of program up and running. And we talk a little bit about it and see if it makes sense or not. But, you know, there's a lot involved.
So quick,
there's a lot involved.
Quick follow-up, when you say no, and then you say, okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, basically, you know, we really haven't said no to any new programs because they've always been good. We depend on the cabinet, we depend on the staff to come to us with programs that make a lot of sense. And that's basically what they've done. It just hasn't been a problem for us.
Yeah.
The one thing you have to address is the needs of the community and the people in them. When you're looking at new programs. Like Jeff said, we started the physical therapy program. We are expanding our nursing program because of the need for nurses, not only here, but across the country. We are partnered up with Cisco for the CDL license to give people a ready job that they can earn by going through the school here and earning their certifications. They can go right into a good, high-paying job. The Firestone project that I mentioned before, this is an apprenticeship program that the college would be a part of. I talked to Keith this morning. He is also talking to some other organizations, the laborers, the carpenters, different, the electrical workers, different unions and different parts of society that need the continuing education for their members and their people that they are putting to work. The one thing that you have to balance is the cost versus what is the community going to receive out of this? Because at the end, this is a community college that is here to take and help this community expand and grow. So we look at all aspects of it, and just like Jeff said, we look for the cabinet and the staff to lead us down the directions that we need to go, and is this a viable program or not?
Yeah, but you are the policy setter, so when do you get to know?
When do we get to know?
Yeah.
When we get to the point where we don't see where this is going to benefit the community as a whole. That would be the only reason. And like Jeff said, we haven't said no yet because everything that they have brought to us has been a fine program that there was a need in the community for. If the cost outlay is more than justifying putting the program on, what we're going to get in return, then we may look at it differently. But everything the cabinet has brought us so far has been needs in the community, and they have done their research for that project.
Well, one thing is I agree with Jeff and Pat on this particular issue. And my thing when the follow-up question is, when do we say no? My no would be if the cost benefit doesn't outweigh the cost of the whole program, and look at the program 5 and 10 years down the road. Are we going to need this program in 5 or 10 years? Is this something that our community will benefit from? We have a lot of manufacturing that's starting to pop up around town. As Pat said, we need to look at our unions around town as well to see what we could expand and partner with them on a lot of things that we could offer, and vice versa they could offer. And we should look at the bigger companies that want to come to Bloomington, that are looking to Bloomington to relocate for a headquarters or a manufacturing plant.
Candidates, thank you for being thoughtful and open with your values and statements there. We'll move to closing statements. Pat Harvey, you first.
I ran for this position 6 years ago to be a part and to give back to the community and to be part of the education system here in McLean County and District 540. My goals have not changed. I think that we as a board have made tough decisions along the line, but I think that as a whole, the college has grown as far as activities go out here, as far as classes offered. We have expanded to meet some of the community needs, and we're ready to move forward with doing that again. The reason that I ran for this two-year term is that will coincide with my retirement, so that I can just write off from everything at one date. So, to be perfectly honest with you, that's why I decided to run for the two-year term instead of the six. I've been involved in education, whether it's been through the union. I was a high school football coach for a few years, youth sports, all that. So I have been involved with some sort of educational thing ever since my children were 9 years old. So this was a final stop on the way, and I have enjoyed my time on the board if I am not elected. It has been a rewarding experience, and I think the community as a whole is only going to expand, and the college will be a big part of that expansion.
Good idea.
Sorry, Pat, I want to put you in early retirement from the trustee.
He might appreciate that.
He might, right? I look forward to representing Heartland and being a voice for students, potential students, and the people of District 540. I will be transparent, accountable to the voters, communicate the needs of our students to our taxpayers. I will hold our Illinois State Legislature and Governor accountable to be sure Heartland is receiving the right amount of funding as promised, and if we're told we have to sacrifice, then all levels of higher education in Illinois should be doing the same as our district. We need to be sure we're offering programs that meet the needs of our community and surrounding communities while keeping the costs down for students and for all of us taxpayers. I want to be sure the voters know how their trustee serves. My current opponent, I attended last week's Board of Trustees meeting in Lincoln, and my opponent was nowhere to be found. He didn't even bother to answer the Pantographs questionnaire they sent out to all of us that were running. I want to thank the other three candidates that are running without opponents that took the time to answer the questions so everyone knows their position on certain issues. I hope all the voters hold him accountable for all the votes he has taken over the years he has served on the board. If you want more communication, accountability, and transparency, vote Lupe Diaz Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm a husband to my wonderful wife of 15 years, father of my beautiful daughter and son. I'm a taxpayer. I lived here in McLean County for over 31 years. I have ran for county board at 19 years old when I was serving as Heartland Community College student government president. I ran 2 years ago for alderman, and I'm running to be your next trustee to serve you well for the next 2 years, and hope everyone in District 540 gives me a chance to serve. I want to thank all of you, my opponent, and all the other trustee candidate for participating in this candidate forum. This is the kind of participation makes running for office awesome. Vote Lupe Diaz, April 2nd. Thank you.
And Jeff Lester, you're batting cleanup.
I played a little baseball. And that's an interesting thing. My first board meeting that I attended back in 2013, that meeting started at 7 o'clock and got over at 1:30 in the morning. That was a time when the baseball team was running through some really, really interesting times. And it was an interesting time, and it was a challenging time. The next board meeting, the president resigned. So I really had an interesting start to being a board member. It's been a very, very good experience for me. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about community colleges. I really understand the value of a community college. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Our semester hours, $158 a semester hour, somewhere in that area. You know, ISU is what? $500 a semester hour. So basically you can come to a community college and get 2 years of college out of the way and pay one-fourth of the cost. It's an amazing thing to me. Plus all the other the things of value that we're providing and training people for their jobs and, you know, just doing all kinds of good thing. So it's been a great experience to me. I've appreciated that experience, and I've enjoyed it. I hope to continue to do that for the next 6 years, and I hope you vote for me. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates Jeff Lesner, Pat Hardesty, and Luke Mabias, for facing the voters, the stakeholders, and the college audience today. Thanks to Katie Pratt and Becky Brock, our timekeepers for the League of Women Voters, my co-questioner, Diana Hallman of McLean County League of Women Voters, and the organizer of this forum, Sarah Deal Thompson. Thank you all. April 2nd is the election. Please go vote, and thank you for being an informed and dependable audience.